Hello and welcome. I'm Haney.
I'm Simon.
I'm Alexander.
We are Knee Deep in Tech, covering the latest from the IT industry with a specific focus on Microsoft and how to get actual value from technology. This is episode 305, the first of two episodes we're tentatively calling Simon's Brain. You will be able to find this and our previous episodes on kneedeepintech.com, iTunes, Spotify, and on most podcasting platforms. So today we are doing something a little different. We are going to be dissecting a body part, an organ. We are going to be dissecting Simon's brain today. Not literally, but figuratively. I'm so sorry. My brain is not braining today.
Yeah. So the intention of this episode is to talk about a lot of things that goes on in my brain and that we all agree are things that you might be interested in, not particularly much in from my brain, but which might you might face in your daily life or your colleagues or your friends. So we're going to talk about things like fear of missing out, stress, mental health, imposter syndrome, a lot of these things. We have touched on some of them before, but now, like, let's take me as an example. And I didn't have a choice, really. So I'm here. I'm just a boy waiting to get my brain dissected.
I think Simon painted himself into a corner the other week, let's put it that way. And while we are calling this Simon's Brain, we're using Simon's Brain as a backdrop, because this is just as much my brain or Haney's brain than Simon's
brain.
Yes, very much so. Everything we're going to be covering today is applicable to all of us in some way, shape, or form, and that is also why we wanted to have this conversation. And we're pretty sure that this is applicable to you, our listeners, as well. There's no one solution to everything, and not everybody's going to feel at home in our explanations, but have a think. I think that this is relevant to just about everyone.
So where should we start?
I think start from the beginning. You've had an extreme career. Let's put it that way. And then start with where you came from and how you ended up where you are. And we're going to set that into context.
Yeah, sounds good. And now you have to correct me here, but I do not have any higher education. I never went to university or anything after
high school.
Is it high school? Yeah, I always mess that up. So I didn't do anything after high school. I moved up to my wife and started to work at a call center. That's where I really started. I had good grades. I always had a relatively easy time in school. When it came to things like studying, I really weren't the best at actually doing the actual studying. That's something that I really envy with people that have gone to university, the ability to actually study something. But I was really good at picking up things, seeing patterns and so on. Did 1 year at a call center, still one of the most valuable years in my life, and probably one of the happiest from a work point of view, because you had a very clear expectation. You came to work at 8, you left work at 5. My Finnish colleagues always told me that, yeah, it's only in Sweden where an 8-hour workday is 9 hours, which still is there, but hey, it's quite fun. Then I moved to the city where I live now and started to work for Atea back in the days. That's also where I first met Alex, a younger version of Alex. Slightly grumpier and slightly more Oracle focused than he is now. It might have something to do with each other. I don't know more about that. But I also have had a fantastic opportunity to develop very, very fast, because I have had managers who always supported me, continuously challenged me, and I started to work as a consultant age 20. And became a solution architect age 23. That's when I had my first architect assignment. And I think that's where we really should start, like what's set the stage for the coming 12 years of my career after that. Because during that project, and I've always looked much older than I actually am, which always have been to my benefit, I have to say. Mm. But there I am, age 23, and one of my one of the customers that I worked for some reason, understood my actual age. I went on vacation, and on my way back from vacation, my project manager at this project where I was the lead architect called me and said, "Hey, we have a meeting at this customer tomorrow. A colleague of yours will be there sitting in." And this colleague had nothing whatsoever to do with the project. He has never been involved in it. So I asked, "Okay, why will he be there?" And my project manager, it was quite obvious that he didn't want to answer the question. But in the end, I asked him straight out, "Is it because he is older than I am?" And the answer were yes. He's only there because he's older, and the customer feels that you might not have the experience and the skills needed to do this assignment. Which, in hindsight, it's not very kind to me, but it's even worse to my colleague, whose only reason to be there were his high age. So I went to work the next day, and I absolutely crushed the customer by showing that I was good enough to do this. But that has followed me since. I've always struggled with my age, and very rarely, if ever, told anyone about how old I am, but that's always been in the back of my mind. And here I am today, older, still relatively young for the role I have and for what I've done, but I still feel like a very uneducated, unknowingly, and young individual, which of course causes some other challenges. But during that time, I've also had the fortunate to become sort of kind of a celebrity within my line of technology. There are a lot of people who know who I am. I'm not the most famous person, but I have been speaking at many of the biggest stages in the world, which then also, of course, from an outside point of view, gives a very mixed view of what I really am. Am I the self-confident speaker that I'm always are on stage, or am I really just a very a person with low self-esteem and with extremely high expectations on myself? So that's where I am today.
And I ran into you quite a few years ago now, and you were very young back then. You're still young because you will always be a lot younger than I am.
Yeah, it's the natural thing.
Yes, that's how time works.
Yeah.
And you've always amazed me in equal parts and frustrated me in equal parts in your infinite belief in yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, I cannot fathom how can someone age 23 even consider themselves an architect. Mm-hmm. For me, that's just, dude, that's dumb. Mm-hmm. And yep, that would be correct unless you had the brains to back it up, mm-hmm, which you did, which is very frustrating, but that's a whole different discussion. We'll get to that. But this is the duality, right? Because I know you very well. I know that you struggle in so many areas, and we're going to pick apart all of them and find all the skeletons in the closet during this discussion. But at the same time, you also manage to come across as very confident. I mean, you would not be where you are if you did not have an extreme confidence in your skills, right? And that's dichotomy, if you will, is very, very strange in some ways. And also, I think one of the reasons why you keep stomping yourself into the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I do also think that Simon is not in this alone. I think there are quite many people out there who maybe have the same experience, that on the other hand, you know, one might have confidence about one what one has been able to reach in the career and, you know, in a way have a lot of belief, but then at the same time have this kind of uncertainty behind the scenes or kind of undercurrent that still brings some doubts in.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. For sure. And I think that's, to me, that's two different things. Because outward looking, I can be very confident because that's what expected from me in the senior role I'm currently am in. I'm expected to be confident. I'm expected to know the answers. And I think I'm at a place where I actually can go into a discussion and feel, okay, I can handle whatever comes out of this. But that doesn't mean that I'm not terrified of someone actually telling me that, no, you're not good enough to do this. You don't have the skill set. And where I feel like the confidence that I show outwards and which I can use when needed is not the confidence that I actually have in my brain. But I'm good at solving problems and getting myself out of hard things. But then I go back and bash myself for not being good enough in those situations. So I think that's a very complicated thing to get one's head around. Like, how can I and many others be so confident when doing certain kinds of work, but at the same time have incredibly low self-esteem? And I think that's something that goes for a lot of people that for various reasons have been fighting themselves up from a more challenging situation. I'm very fortunate in me being a white male in a very well-educated and rich country. So I'm not trying to compare that to anything else. But I do think that there are some brilliant people where the age, their gender, their nationality have forced them to show a very confident and strong outward picture, but where they struggle with self-esteem when they're alone. Could that be, is that something that resonates with you or with people you know or in general?
Well, I can just speak to myself. I don't have good grades. I don't have a complete set of grades from high school. That's an interesting conversation in and of itself. But I always felt that either I am much better than everybody else at everything, or somebody's going to find out that I am a complete fraud and laugh me out of the room. That is why I have an extreme skill set. It's taking me 45 years to figure that out. The number of weird things that I can do is just bananas. Is it applicable in everyday life? Not necessarily, but I can pretty much pick up anything. I know this, but still, I'm also extremely good at figuring out exactly what I should have done better in every situation. So Sunday night quarterbacking myself is definitely, so it's a double-edged sword, right? It's the one thing that is driving me to be better, be faster, be more than everybody else. But it's also the thing that is slowly killing me from inside. And I think you can resonate with that, Simon, as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what's your take,
Hayden? Yeah, because now I'm interested, because my view, and I've known you for a couple of years now, Haney, I'm not certain that you're driven by the same thing as me and Alex. Or are you? You're just very Finnish humble.
Well, I was really trying to think about this while you were talking and listen at the same time, which is not an easy feat to do. And well, I, on the other hand, came to the field out of, you know, left field without having any experience in IT or even knowing how the internet works. That was the level of my knowledge in IT. And I got to learn on the job, and I weirdly landed a junior architect position, which is like a weird place to start from, but it really worked for me and helped me gather my knowledge and skills very quickly. Mm. And like, I could use the skills that I have with people from the very beginning of like running workshops and gathering information and things like that. That has always been like a big strength for me, that I can do that. Even when I didn't know very much, I could still do that without feeling like I'm on very loose ground. I just had to handle the things that I don't know in a certain way. Mm. But yeah. I don't know exactly how to describe how I relate to this, because in a way I feel very much that I know how much work I've put into to learn everything that I know today. It hasn't just happened by accident. I've actually put a lot of time and effort to learn all the things that I've learned and to have all the skills that I have. And I would imagine that I maybe would have at least earlier come across maybe not so confident on the outside. Maybe nowadays it's different, but you know, I'm not the life of the party or the how would you say, I'm not the one who needs to be the one speaking necessarily in a group of people. I'm a bit of an observer in a lot of situations. And so I am making no sense today. So in a way, I think that, you know, when you are in a specific position, then you can look quite confident. But in a way, I'm not maybe that like boldly confident in a way that I'm very much like pushing that out there. It's just, you know, being there and doing what I can and doing what I know. Yeah. I don't think that I have so much internal struggle, lack of self-confidence, but it's something that I've worked with for many, many years to just not do that to myself, because it's not conducive to me and it's not actually conducive to others as well. So it's something I've been unlearning. It's not something that I didn't have, but, you know, I've been working on letting that go.
Yeah, and that is fascinating, because if I knew how to do that, I would gladly do it.
It's not easy. No. I have to say that.
That's one of the aspects of Haney that I noticed very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that I have not been able to pick up. I can learn just about anything, but I have not been able to figure that out, which is equal parts frustrating, but also it's so nice to find something that I don't seem to be able to learn in 15 minutes, because it means that I need to struggle. It means that I need to try, and I need to fail, because failing is almost an unknown to me. At least from an outside perspective. In my head, yeah, I'm failing constantly, but that's also part of this conversation.
But that's actually a really good continuation, and we'll go into failing and therefore also reaching goals. Because like you said, I think that I've heard many times during my career that why do Simon get to do everything, and is he never wrong? And I have achieved a lot of things, things that I've done, things that I've been given. It's always been because I've never had the like breaks to not ask. Like that's the thing. I've been given things because I've asked for it, and I've like rarely, if ever, been given a no. And I have been very successful, no question about it. But like Alex said, I still don't feel that successful. I'm incredibly proud over what I have achieved, both in my work life and in my personal life. But I also constantly see that I fail at both being a consultant, a dad, a husband, all of those things. And that's a struggle, especially since now, and we'll pause that and we'll get back to that topic soon. Especially now, and I still remember like the time when I got my first MVP award. I still see myself in the hallway in our old flat after Ignite 2018. My daughter were 1.5 or something like that. And I got the email. It was totally unexpected. And I got the email. And I literally fell to the ground crying because that was like peak Simon. And my wife, of course, got super scared, and my daughter started to cry because no one understood what was going on. So that was like peak for me, and it opened up tons of things that we'll talk about later. And I think always find it very funny I can't remember how we connected over it, Alex, but you got your award at the same time, and we both
I remember.
Yeah.
I remember.
So how did we communicate it? Because I do remember that we had worked on this journey together. And we weren't aware that we had received it. So I at least felt that, hey, should I even tell Alex?
It's a great story. Now I'm going to cover it in a second. But something that I want to point out, because I don't want to forget this in the conversation, mm-hmm. is the MVP award, it means so many things, but it is also 100% external to us.
Yes.
I think this is something that Haney can talk more to us about. I don't think either of our brains are raining because this is kind of this is tough to talk about. No, yes. we were going to Stockholm. We're going to go on a train the next day, mm-hmm. Actually to visit Microsoft, which is hilarious. And I got the email in the evening, mm-hmm. and I didn't hear anything from you. So I wasn't sure if you had got it. So I didn't really want to wave it around in your face. And you reasoned same way. So going on the train, I can't remember who of us just offhandedly mentioned, oh, and did you get an email yesterday? And the other went, yeah, I did. Did you? And from that moment, that was the best train ride I've ever had. Because yes, mm-hmm. suddenly here I was with a guy that I had spent so much time mm-hmm. trying to work my way through this, and boom, we were both in.
And it's probably the only time the train has been on time while you being on it. So
also true.
Yeah. And why am I talking about this? And we'll try to catch up all of these things that we have mentioned now in terms of never being pleased with something you achieved, with the MVP award, because we'll get back to that, but also these goals. And I do not want to compare myself to an Olympic athlete, but I will do that still. Like there are a lot of Olympic athletes that have reached their goal of taking a gold in the Olympic Games. They've trained for hours and hours and hours, and we'll get back to sports later on, even though I know that Alexander absolutely hates it. We'll get to that. Haney is much more easy in that way. You at least do some sports. You choose to, Alex. Martial arts are sports. But the feeling they get when they get that gold medal and they have nothing more to achieve, that's kind of challenging, because I feel that I peaked at a very early stage. When I got my MVP award, I was probably one of the youngest who had received it at that point in time. And I already were like one of the leading architects at the TEA Sweden at that point. I had spoken at events, and very shortly after being awarded the MVP award, I spoke at Microsoft Ignite. I've done all of that. So that's also something that I've struggled with afterwards in terms of what's my next goal. And we'll get back to that when we talk about fear of missing out.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear this, because I don't know, I think I might have a little bit of a different approach.
Yeah, please.
To everything.
to everything.
But it's interesting because, as said, like I used to do competitive sports for a really long time until my 20-somethings. I did cross-country skiing. And at least, I'm not sure if it, like after the fact, I'm not sure if it was my goal, but I had a goal to become one of the best in Finland. Mm-hmm. Not sure it was coming from me, but you know, it was what was expected of me to, and mm-hmm. you were expected to have that goal. And pretty much I tangled myself up in a mess with my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like looking after the fact at my results, I felt like I wasn't going the way I needed to go. And looking at that after the fact, I can definitely say I was going the way I was supposed to go. But I tricked myself to believe I wasn't. And that really started like a downward spiral for everything in my training and my competitions and so forth. So I don't know if it's that background of having gone through that process of really like tearing yourself down, just really like in a very physical sport, you can still tear yourself down mentally. That like this whole work and MVP thing, I approach it totally differently, probably partially due to that. And, you know, things that I worked on. So for example, like for me, goals, I may be a little bit focused more on like, what is it that I want to do next than some ultimate goal? Like this is something I need to reach to be happy, to be successful. I don't really have that. I'm like, hey, this is the next thing I want to do. And it's interesting that even by doing that, I've kind of reached to a similar point. But kind of the approach is maybe a little like different. I have not so much focused on like the end goal, but just kind of what is the next thing that I want to reach. And yeah, I had some other point I needed to make, but I forgot it. So I think we can continue and it'll probably pop back up at some point.
This is a pretty good segue to the whole discussion of FOMO. Because I think we can pretty much wrap a lot of things up into what you just said, Haney. Me, I don't feel like I have a direction for my career at the moment. And this has been going on for quite a while. And this, I feel, is an issue. Because if I don't have a goal, I can't track my progress towards that goal, which means that I'm essentially coasting. And things can come out of nowhere and derail me despite not having a goal, which is kind of weird, I know. This, in turn, gives me a feeling of not being in control of my own destiny, which is one of the best ways that I know of to mess with my head and stress me and, well, is not good for my mental health at all. But Haney, you've managed to figure out how to not necessarily need a North Star. You are just happy if you do something. And you can apparently look at what you achieve and go, yeah, I did that. That's kind of cool. And not look at what you didn't achieve and go, yeah, I should have been able to do that if I didn't, I don't know, eat ice cream instead. So
yeah. Of course, like I make mistakes and, you know, I don't do like I do speaking and I'm not always happy with how I did my speaking gig. But that doesn't take away from the things that I have actually achieved and the parts that have been good. And I can still learn from that. And I actually do want to learn from it. I want to take that, you know, I made a mistake, but I let it go then because it doesn't really serve me anymore if I've learned something from it and I can do something better in the next time I do that same session, for example.
Yeah, I'm trying to take all of this in. and I think like to get a real-time insight into my brain, my first question now is why can't I be as good as Haney? Yeah, but like, I would love to be at that stage because where I am today, especially with this fear of missing out, I've been doing, I think, more and more travel and more speaking things. The challenge in speaking a lot and doing as the best I can to be good at speaking is that more organizations want me to speak at their events. So I have all the opportunities to do so. It's not good for me to constantly be traveling around doing things and very rarely be pleased with whatever I've achieved. Like people think that I'm just saying it because I'm humble or want to brag, but like I can probably say that I've been really pleased with probably two or three of my speaking engagements ever. And I've spoken hundreds of times. But like there is one of these like speaking engagements where I know that I, after the fact, were pleased. And I can't even remember the other ones, but I know that I've been pleased. So therefore, I continue to find opportunities because I don't want people to forget me. I don't want to miss out. Like I have events where if I don't apply for this event this year, again, they won't have me the next year or the year after that. So it's a constant, and I've tried to explain that to my wife and to therapists that I had. Yes, in full transparency, I've had three different ones.
Only three? Oh,
only three.
Spring child.
Yeah, that's another discussion we can have.
With that, we are coming to the end of the first episode of Dissecting Simon's Brain and figuring out what goes in there and what we can learn from it as well on the way. So thank you for joining, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Native in Tech. Native in Tech is a weekly technology podcast hosted by Alexander Arvidsson, Simon Binder, and Heini Ilmarinen. If you have any feedback, questions, or would like to be part of an episode, please reach out to us on social media or via email at podcast@nativeintech.com.